You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome to the Big Suey, a podcast exclusive.
Risky move.
Just when you thought the show could not be more diluted.
Walk the plank.
Bam.
No more free Disney trips.
Now here's the marching band of nowhere.
Arr, matey.
Fat face.
Dan's been stress eating.
And the habitual liar.
Stugatz can't be trusted.
The Big Suey.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate radio life for me.
What I'm about to say is probably a bit reckless, probably irresponsible, but I'm ready to call it official. I'm ready to break the news, to basically tell America and to have it attached to my name that the pandemic is over. And the reason I'm willing to do that, even though you probably think that I'm pro-science and you probably think that that's still premature, is because I can declare, after Kyrie Irving says I'm going back to Boston and I hope they're not too racist in the crowd, after throwing popcorn at Russell Westbrook, after spitting over 50 Cent to spit on Trae Young,
right,
America is back to normal. We're back to where we were.
Normalcy, the
stadiums filled with people. We're mistreating the athletes again. Yep. We long for being
Nature
allowed back
healing.
Into the stadium, and now we're back in the stadium, and we didn't waste any time getting kicked out of the stadium.
Dan, we are back.
America's back, baby. Yes. We are back. We can throw popcorn at Russell Westbrook and make him insane. We can spit on Trae Young. New Yorkers celebrated last night as if they'd won the championship. It was so great to see. Basketball is better when New York cares. Basketball is better when New York is loud. And New York has never celebrated something so pathetic. Winning one home game of two in the first round of four against the five. They went to the streets last night to celebrate.
We got the split, Dan.
You got the split at home, terrified in the third and fourth quarter. Your defense is legitimately good. I see Max Kellerman saying that the Knicks got lucky because Atlanta couldn't make anything in the second half. The Knicks are good at defense. Tom Thibodeau's teams are good at defense.
They're good at defense. I don't think any Knicks fan expects this to be the team that brings them all the way back to like an Eastern Conference final, although that would be great against the Nets. Oh, who doesn't want that?
You don't
Knicks,
want that.
Nets, Easter, I do want that.
You should not want that.
Why?
You should not want that.
I mean, damn, all you have is upside in that series. No one expects you to win.
You're going to lose.
Okay, but we made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, that's exciting.
Fair enough.
I mean, we're not there yet. It's 1-1 going back
to
Atlanta.
Course.
Right.
You're in the street celebrating, and he's already going to the Eastern Conference against the Nets, of course.
I mean, the Knicks would have home court advantage throughout that playoff series with the Nets, and I've listened to a fair amount of New York Knicks radio and fan-created content. They want the Nets.
They
want the Nets in the worst way.
They do. We do. I'm back. I'm back to being a Knicks fan. No one expects this to be the team that brings them all the way back, but it's a step, and it's a step in the right direction. You have LeBron tweeting about the crowd last night. LeBron might go back there to finish his career.
There he is. He's back. Stugatz is back. LeBron does the little crumbs there. I love New York. They've been doing that one for 10 years, which it's funny that you say that, Stugatz, because what beat
beat the Hawks last night was absolutely the 2011 Bulls that we cared about so much here in Miami, of Taj Gibson, Derrick Rose. Zach Randolph averaged 37 points a game against the Hawks this year. He's looked awful, and you're going to lose that series if you need Derrick Rose to win it for you. But Tom Thibodeau put him in the second half, started him in the second half, and Derrick Rose was 2000. It felt like 2011 Derrick Rose.
It really did. It's a nice story, I guess. Reggie Bullock. I mean, listen, that's the beauty of this team. There's not really a superstar on this team.
You told me 2 days ago that Julius Randle was a superstar.
Yeah, he's been bailed out by Alec Burks.
Bullshit. There's not a superstar on this team. You've been gassing up Julius Randle all season long, and I think you all realize, oh, shit, it's Julius Randle.
No, but Mike, I have said if Randle is your second or third best player, then you have a really good team.
Right now, he was the third best player on the Lakers, and they were not a playoff team.
Well, now he's the Knicks' best player, and I'm not saying it's enough, but it's good enough for now.
You said he was a superstar 2 days ago. The last time we did a show, you said Julius Randle was a superstar. That's a thing that came out of your mouth.
I did say that. You're right. I regret saying it, but I don't.
Julius Randle was the second best player, I think, in New Orleans, and they didn't make the playoffs. Right. So this is proven throughout his career. He's 26 years old on his third team. He's obviously having a career season. It's a good year, but in no way is he a superstar. And if you voted for that guy for MVP, shame on you.
I mean, this is why James Dolan wins, by the way, and always win. He could be the worst owner in sports, and there are people lined up for miles to walk into these
but
games.
But would you please do me a favor?
I'm excited,
and
Dad,
stop after one playoff game saying this is why James Dolan always wins.
Like, it's just unfortunate.
James Dolan has been laughed at across two decades in the sport. Yes, he makes money. His value, the franchise value, always goes up.
But Dan, it was leading to a place where I was going to tell you my fear about the Knicks moving forward. You'll get Julius Randle. He's willing to go there. He's willing to take that money, right, and go play the guard. I'm still not certain free agents will be willing to go to New York because of that owner. I'm serious. I don't know. I don't know if a guy like Kevin Durant already made that decision. He went to Brooklyn.
When you say a step in the right direction, are the New York Knicks a step in the right direction more than the 4 or 5 seed in the other conference? Because winning one home playoff game as a 4 seed, that reaction, I was startled at the lack of self-awareness. You can be excited, obviously. It's great when New York is excited. But the lack of self-awareness to celebrate, I thought it was embarrassing to celebrate that way. To celebrate that game that way, as if you don't know anything about what great basketball is.
You would say, act like you've been there before. We haven't been there in a long time. And so
but
I
New
don't
York,
mind the
but
celebration.
New York acts
last
like
night.
They
no.
invented everything. Like New York, the mecca of basketball.
What,
the
New
mecca
York?
Of
no.
basketball that hasn't won anything in 2 decades.
What they're trying to show you, Dan, New York's a weird place. This is why the Knicks mean so much to that town. We have 2 football teams, 2 baseball teams, 2 hockey teams. But for this basketball team, we all come together. Jet fans don't hate Giant fans. Met fans don't hate Yankee fans. We all root for one basketball team, and that team is the New York Knicks. And all they're trying to do is show you what the NBA could be like when that place is rocking and when the Knicks are relevant. That's it. And you love it. And you know you love it. And everyone who thinks they hate them, you don't. You love them. You need them on that wall. You want them on that wall.
I love to hate them. It's more interesting that way.
Dan, the New Yorkers need something to be exciting about. It's been a long, cold, depressing winter. The pandemic was terrible here. I mean, it was terrible everywhere, but it was very bleak in New York City. This is finally something for us all as New Yorkers to come together and sing in the streets.
Exactly.
Stugatz, what was that fake Jack Nicholson that you just debuted there? What is it that you did? You pointed a sausage finger at me. You want to do that again?
You want us on that wall? You need us on that wall?
I'm glad that you did that because it sort of ties together this with the local hour, and the shipping container was just popping like popcorn when they heard you say that.
You want me on that wall. You need me.
Thank you for the courtesy laugh. You have no idea what we're doing right now, Stugatz, but I appreciate you.
You got it.
So Stugatz is a big winner because New York is the center of the universe. And Jessica, thinks that New York is the center of the universe, even though one of the many reasons that I have this poison in me is that people in New York are always telling us, like Jessica, that it's the center of the universe while moving down here, which is what you're doing now.
Nice weather.
At a more alarming rate than ever, knocking on Chris Cody's door asking to buy his house every 3 days because New Yorkers have just realized, wait, if I can work from home, then I'm going to go do that in Florida instead of New York. I'm going to not work from home in New York. I'm going to work by a pool in Florida year-round.
Dan, you're making me move to Miami. You're making me be one of those obnoxious New Yorkers that's moving to Miami. This is your fault, Dan.
The charm of our little gathering here. Stugatz is saying he's already annoyed by the Nets. He's allowed to be annoyed. Why'd you just get to the annoyance of the Nets? Why did that just arrive?
That is a team that is so representative of what basketball has become. It's not a team that plays together during the regular season. It's three superstars who played seven games together during the regular season. And here we are in the playoffs. And I am telling you, everyone is playing for second place. And so for me, it just annoys me. You have three guys who barely played this season. One of them, a complete pain in the ass in Kyrie Irving. I don't know what Kevin Durant is. James Harden, I mean, he's a good player, but he needs Durant and Kyrie Irving to win a championship. It's just so representative of what basketball has become, unlike the Knicks. That's old school basketball.
Oh,
they don't really have a superstar. They played 72 games together. They are grinding it out. They are playing defense with the Butcher, an old school coach, and Tom Thibodeau. That's what basketball is all about, Dan.
You've never sounded older.
Thank you.
One of the things that I love about what it is that you just did is that you said a complete pain in the ass, and I had no idea who on that team you were talking about. You had to come back on the back end and say Kyrie Irving because I legitimately didn't know.
Could have been any of the three. You're right.
And so I love what's happening here in Boston, where Kyrie Irving is saying the thing that so many black athletes who have played in Boston have said. Kyrie Irving did leave there under ways that would make fans angry no matter the color of your skin. But he is giving voice to the same thing that a lot of black athletes, David Price, Carl Crawford, guys, Bill Russell has said it. Boston's history on this subject has been earned. It's your own players that you've applauded who have said it about Boston. And now Kyrie Irving goes back and he says, I hope I don't get hit with some of that racism in the stands. And it's bulletin board material. It's bulletin board material. We're turning.
It's a dangerous game. You are tempting Boston fans,
it's
man.
It's unbelievable where you arrive in a place where Boston is a bulletin board material where the Boston Globe is saying, well, now the stakes have been raised. Can you not be racist, Boston? Can you get really, really passionate about Kyrie Irving without crossing the line? Can you do it? Because he's inflamed the Boston crowd, and basketball's always more fun when you've got a crowd hating someone. You saw that the Knicks are starless. Trae Young is talking like a villainous star.
Yep.
Trae Young wants that. He wants what that building is bringing him, and it is so much more fun when basketball has something like that. I don't think that Kyrie to Boston, though, is going to feel fun.
That's not going to feel fun. Do you think the Celtic fans can do it? Do you think they can you know, be mean to Kyrie without being racist?
Can they? Can you, Boston? It's bulletin board material. He's saying, I'm coming in. He's saying something that's not even headline worthy. He's just basically saying, I'm going back to play in Boston. I hope they can be mean without being racist. I hope they could just be sports mean without being racist mean.
It's actually well done by Kyrie because he's pointing out something that's pretty important and we've ignored for a very, very long time for whatever reason.
I don't say we've ignored for a very long time.
Right.
And I don't say
apologies.
For whatever reason when I've got a party that seems to be running on a platform exclusively of white resentment. Yeah. But
well, listen, I'm praising Kyrie for bringing it up. Call him out. I mean, he did. He called him out.
Why were you just counting money there? Did you feel like you were so good?
I feel like I lost a credit card. Did you feel, I got to be honest
no,
with you.
I'd like to go through what just happened there. You decided.
I lost a credit card.
You made, you made an appearance in the race conversation as lazily as possible.
I did.
By throwing a question back to me. Do you think they could do it, Dan? And you thought that was going to be the end of it. You thought, do you think they could do it without being racist? Then you reached in your pocket and you pulled out a bunch of cash. And while we were talking, you decided to start counting it as if you'd done so well in this segment that you deserved to be paid more?
No. Well, I do. But anyway, I was worried about, I lost a credit card. And plus I have, like, look at all these dental appointments I have written down on cards. And I was trying to make sure if today was one of them, and it's not. And so I was just, you know, I'm just being Stugatz. Sorry.
Stugatz, I've worked here for a month and you've already been to dentist, I think, 6 or 7 times in 4 weeks.
Yeah, you met me at a rough time in my life. This is a time where, you know, all the things you're told to do when you're growing up, when you're in your 20s, you ignore them. I'm paying for all of them right now. All of them. Seriously.
You're not paying for them. Every time we're in a meeting, you're physically counting money. You did this at the Meadowlark meetings. Everybody was watching you. You're just counting your money for some reason at the table.
I'm looking for stuff, Dan. That's all I'm doing, man. I lose stuff. What do you want from me?
But we're doing,
and I'm fidgety. You know me.
What I want from you is when we're talking about Kyrie Irving in Boston, right, not to say the exact sentence you said for whatever reason. Just right. you weren't interested in the conversation anyway. You could connect with it in no way, and you just tossed it back to me. All I'm asking for is the bare minimum of don't count money while I'm doing race discussion talk.
It's a fair ask.
Stugatz here for my friends over at Simply Safe. When you travel, do concerns back home nag you? Did you lock up? Did you leave a window open? That's why I recommend investing in Simply Safe Home Security today for award-winning security and peace of mind wherever your summer plans take you. I've had Simply Safe in my home for many years now. The peace of mind it gives me, especially during the summertime when I'm all over the place, is incredible. Because I know the things I care about, the things I value back home, I can always keep an eye on it using Simply Safe's indoor and outdoor cameras. So do me a favor. Before you head out on your next vacation, make sure to protect your whole home with Simply Safe's variety of indoor and outdoor cameras, plus add sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day, no contracts to worry about, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Simply Safe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. So right now, get 20% off any new Simply Safe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/DLB. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
Roy looks crestfallen. He looks different than a couple of days ago when he looked hungover after a Panthers game, because he was hungover. Mike started last night, and that was a whimper last night, to not score a goal, to have your season end that way. The last two goals were terrible. And so Mike started very early with the trying to cheer himself up. It was a good season. It was a nice season. Ran into a buzzsaw in the first round. It's almost unfair to put logic on it and simply say, look, that team was a champion already, and they added two signature names in the playoffs. One of them was rested and didn't play all season and was in the middle of everything throughout the series.
He was probably the best player in the series, right?
And so Mike Ryan has arrived at a place where, what are you shaking your head about, Mike? He's already...
Oh, Vasilevskiy.
Yeah, their goalie.
Yeah, okay,
Vasilevskiy.
Right. Yeah,
God damn him. But Kucherov was outstanding.
Was great.
Yeah. Sandbagging Tampa Bay Lightning. Had us all fooled. It's unfair. Best team in Panther history, even better than 96, and nothing to show for.
We got out goalied, right, Roy? Like, that's the story of the series.
I mean, they played three goaltenders during the season, series. Of course they got out goaltended. I mean,
but I feel like it was pretty even everywhere else. Like, that's the difference, I feel like.
No.
But I feel like Huberdeau had just played just as well as Kucherov in this series. I believe they were both tied for the NHL lead in points for this series.
But defensively, Tampa was tremendously better than the Panthers. The Panthers are god-awful defensively. From the neutral zone on back to the defensive zone, Tampa was way better than the Panthers were.
Yeah. Let me go to the excuse tree and pick off an Ekblad fruit, too, because that's one of our – that's our best defenseman. We were missing him there. I know he gets involved more in the attack. He's not basically the butcher back there. But we didn't really have an answer for the Tampa Bay Lightning when it wasn't 5-on-5 hockey. Even on 5-on-5, they get out on the break, and their pace was a problem. And we had to play a perfect game against the Tampa Bay Lightning to beat them. They were a lot better than they showed during the regular season, and they were a damn good team in the regular season. Previous years might have been a conference final. Unfortunately, it's another first-round exit for a team that hasn't really gotten anywhere in about 25 years. It's a shame. They're supposed to be better next year, but it hurts. But there is promise, Dan, in Spencer Knight. Yes, they are the first team in NHL history to give two starts to three different goalies, but it feels like Spencer Knight is the answer at the position, and you get Ekblad next year.
He's adorable, too. Can I just say that? But we shouldn't have been playing the Lightning. Like, we just need to re-say that.
That's the part that feels unfair. Can you explain to me, Roy, because I don't understand this, and I don't know that I've read reporting that helps me understand it any better. If you're taking Spencer Knight as a 19-year-old goalie in the middle of the first round or the high end of the middle of the first round, why are you giving Bobrovsky 7 years right after that? Like, what is the logic of that? And never mind, I understand Bobrovsky was supposed to be a lot better than this, and he has not been good for the money. But why would you do that? Why would you give a 19-year-old goalie first-round money and give a 7-year contract? And doesn't he also have, it's not a no trade in hockey, it's called a no move. Doesn't he have a clause where you're stuck with that, basically?
Yeah, he and Keith Yandel both have no-movement clauses in their contract. The 7 years, that was a Dale Tallon situation. He signed him to 7 years, and that was way too long. But you expected Spencer Knight to go into the minors or finish his college career and then go into the minors, have a little bit of seasoning, and then get back up to the big club. Didn't expect it to happen this quickly. So now the Panthers are in a situation where you have a goaltender that they have to pay $12 million. They have the backup goaltender that they're not going to re-sign, who's a free agent, and they have Spencer Knight. Spencer Knight's probably going to end up sharing starting duties with Bob next season.
But to answer Dan's question, hockey is kind of like baseball. If you have an amazing rotation in the MLB draft, you're not going to not draft the best pitching prospect if he's available. Why? Because it takes years to season these players. They drafted Spencer Knight in 2019. He just signed with them after wrapping up his collegiate career with Boston College. So he had some seasoning still and some growing to do.
But you're saying they took the best player. They weren't expecting him to be this good that quickly.
Yeah, you take the best player. There are sometimes you draft for need if you have a player that's ready to go. But these are assets. I think DiPietro was drafted by the Islanders when they had Roberto Luongo. They're trade assets. You get for the best player available, even if you're set at the position.
But don't you have a problem if you've got a lot of dead money now and Bobrovsky, who was bad, and he was overpaid all season, and you just went to try and save your season by telling everybody, this is the guy we trust to save our season, because the other guy that we gave 7 years gave up six goals in the last game. To me, and I don't know anything. I just arrived here. But to me, that tells me, that shouts as an organization, Bobrovsky's done.
Yes. Well, I don't think he's done. He showed this regular season. He's a worse goalie statistically in the playoffs. But Bobrovsky can be a contributor here. Obviously, Spencer Knight, we're going in that direction. It's going to be impossible to move. And another thing that really stinks about this Florida Panther team is they showed flashes. They were in the play-in round against a very good Islander team last year. They make trades outside of Sam Bennett. They're not really improving their team. You look at these trades for a contender, and you're like, that's a bit of a lateral move. What's going on here? And a lot of it's shedding salary because they're saddled with this Bobrovsky contract. It is absolutely an albatross on the Florida Panthers going forward. They're doing their best to manage the cap situation. They luckily have Spencer Knight on a cheap deal, but Bobrovsky will be hurting them for years.
Could he be tradable down the line? Meaning if he puts together a string of really good games, regular season, some other team's goalie gets hurt, maybe they make a trade for Bob just to get rid of that contract.
And ultimately, say Bobrovsky has a complete turnaround season and is lights out like he was in Columbus, and he becomes an absolute desire in the open trade market, he can still say no. He has to approve it himself.
He doesn't have to move.
He doesn't.
It's a problem. Is the last two games of the season, you just had a goaltending shift organizationally, and you've got a lot of money tied up in the guy that isn't going to be on the right end of that shift. I'm watching here on the televisions that we now have working in here. We are really ramping things up till June 4th. We've got June 4th, 24 hours. We're going to do 8 shows in one day, nonstop. 24-hour programming on June 4th. Tell your friends. We will give you more information next week. We'll not be on Monday, but I see on the television here, Stugatz, that the Julio Jones news is now back in the ESPN cycle where the Falcons general manager is saying they are now going to field offers for Jones. And I wanted to circle back around on something that I don't feel like we talked about enough earlier in the week. And I should have talked more with Greg Cody about this.
Right.
You are reading reports now that the NFL and a whole lot of people are watching what it is that happened with Shannon Sharp and Skip Bayless and Julio Jones, where Julio Jones called Shannon Sharp, did not know that he was on the air, and said, I'm out of here, sort of breaking through all of the media myths of how much people care about the customers and the media. What you're giving as Julio Jones to the media in interviews is not honesty like that, which is what you get when Shannon Sharp picks up the phone and all of the marketing around sports disappears. And you have in your face an honest moment brought to you by television that they didn't know was going to be televised. And the Atlanta Falcons, after this happened, now keep in mind, journalistically, what happened there is immoral, period. It's unethical what Shannon Sharp and the producers of that show did to Julio Jones. It is simply wrong. It is morally unethical. It graduates to illegal if Julio Jones is pissed off and decides something about pressing charges and consent in not taping, which has not yet happened. But what I thought was interesting is that the Falcons then turned around and on their sanctioned social media put out the news of their wide receiver being betrayed unethically and possibly illegally if he wanted to press charges. And the thing that I wanted to talk with you and the audience about is I don't know how mad I'm allowed to get about this ethical breach slash illegal breach if Julio Jones is only so mad about it. But if you're not going to protect these things, if Fox as an organization doesn't have any producers, Skip Bayless is a former journalist, but you've seen what Skip Bayless has become in his career toward the end of his career.
Right.
He's just trolling LeBron and hitting the notes that get attention. They got their attention and are now apologizing. The NFL is mad. The Falcons are mad. They have hurt the trade value of an NFL franchise. They have hurt Julio Jones and their ability to move him because he's already announced to everybody he's available. That's a business being hurt by something unethical that was done on television by a league partner. And my question to you is, does anybody care?
Nope. I mean, Dan, you have reasons to care. You care about journalism. You care about the principles of journalism. You're an old school journalist, but fans? No.
The reason I bring it up is because
I think I care about the Falcons and their trade and their leverage? No.
The reason I bring it up is because I'm watching. I'm not talking about the Falcons or their. I know you want your coverage, Stugatz, and the sports fan just wants his information, no matter how gritty and dirty it is. It's how TMZ exists.
But Dan, I don't care about journalism the way you do. You care about it. So if Julio Jones is good with it, I'm good with it.
This is what I'm telling you, okay? It's a larger point here that I'm trying to make, because you can shrug your shoulders and let Julio Jones decide what's important for you ethically and journalistically. But John Oliver last week did 30 minutes on local news and how you could buy your way onto local news with crappy medical products that aren't in any way real, because that's how local news is deteriorating as the money makes its way more and more into what is the credibility of what it is you're viewing on television. And so this is just a sports thing. It's a silly sports thing. Who cares? It's Julio Jones, the trade. We eat it up. It's content and it's wonderful. But that's an ethical breach by a league partner that journalistically has responsibilities not to do that to its employees. To like, they just did that to Julio Jones. That he's not mad about it is nice. But where are you on this argument, A, if it's you, and B, if it is somebody who's mad about it and then is pressed charges because you're not allowed to use for content and ratings something that is a clear journalistic ethical breach, indisputable. Anybody in the industry would tell you it's so. And nobody cares. And I don't know whether that has a subsequent corrosion. I do know that Fox is only so sorry about it because they can get all those executives mad, but they got all those clicks. They got all that news. They got all that traffic. And when those trades start getting made,
I believe you don't have to care about it. And I understand, man, I just saw that orange turd take a hatchet to everything I care about. That guy who doesn't have any credibility sitting there telling me how the New York Times, which is one of the greatest value anywhere in consumption, the amount of work you get for a small price of the New York Times, when I know the vetting and the credibility of what goes in to those efforts of putting that together, this is a very small thing compared to all of that. This is my little toy department realm where the journalism ought to still matter. But Skip Bayless is your most credentialed journalist on that show, and he didn't do shit to stop that. And nobody did shit to stop that. And Julio Jones shrugs his shoulders, and Stugatz is like, well, you're feeding me my content, and nobody cares about that particular corrosion. And to me, it's bothersome, not because of the business, not because Julio Jones, not because of the Atlanta Falcons, because nobody cares. That's the part that's bothersome to me. It's not, it's that, it's a shrug. It's, I'm sitting here telling you guys, man, this stuff is dirty. Like, that's, it's not far, Stugatz. If you don't care about something being unethical, being done journalistically to Julio Jones, because it's not your life, your team, your athlete, it ain't a great leap to, yeah, and I can throw popcorn at these guys, and I can spit on them, and I don't care whether they're racist chants in the stands that Boston has been complaining about, because they're not human beings. You could do unethical stuff to them. What difference does it make?
But the reaction kind of dictates whether or not you care or not, right? Like, if Julio Jones doesn't care, this was done to Julio Jones. It wasn't done to anyone else, and the Falcons.
But does he get to decide your journalistic ethics? Are you going to let Julio Jones decide that for you? He should be angry on behalf of wherever the betrayal is. That's not where I'm angry. I'm angry that a journalistic league partner gave you, televised, a moment of honesty from an athlete illegally.
Right.
Not illegal because he didn't press charges. And the reaction is, well, we got honesty. Mm-hmm. The reaction is, what do I care? I got mine. And,
right.
And to me, it's just sort of philosophical. You don't have to get angry about that, but this corrosion that's been happening across journalism, as Stugatz, Miami is corrupt, man. And now as newspapers die and local news people have to take money from charlatans, like, you got nobody watching the corruption. You've got money eating at everything. You've got the checks and balances on an American democracy system that holds the power accountable. It is struggling to stay alive and has to do desperate things to get ratings and to get money. And we're shrugging. We're shrugging as a country as I get scared because it's an important checks and balances. And I know this is a silly sports thing. This is just something in our little playpen. But the larger thing that bothers me is that the consumer doesn't give a f-, does not care that this is changing, does not care that this is an essential portion of democracy.
So you're mad at me.
Is it also not like the plea as well is, please care about my thing, right? And ultimately, the marketplace of consumers determine whether or not they care. The interesting thing to me is Stugatz is very much judging the reaction here, and you're judging the action independent
the
of
action
the consequences.
The action means a lot to him, though, Chris.
Right, well, and it should, because it is, as Dan said, an ethical breach. I guess I would posit to you kind of on the reverse side, how is this different than what Aaron Rodgers did on draft night? Which is basically his camp leaking to Adam Schefter and other reporters his displeasure with the Green Bay Packers. You would assume that Shannon Sharpe and Julio Jones have had a conversation about this prior to it airing on television. Now, it's not as artfully done as Adam Schefter tweeting out a report on draft night, but it is still ultimately the message that he probably wants to get out there in some capacity.
I was confused by Adam Schefter's interview with Dan Patrick and how that news came to be. I don't know how Adam Schefter does his job. I don't know how Woj does his job. I don't know the trafficking of secrets, the talking to agents. I don't know how that ended up, where it ended up, and his explanation of it on Dan Patrick made me more confused than I was when I didn't know anything at all, because when that came out, I assumed that that was leaked by the Aaron Rodgers right. camp purposefully. But when Adam Schefter was answering those questions, I I worry, Stugatz, when you get these distortions of what's the actual truth and what's reality television, what's made for TV. When it jumps out to you, Stugatz, that Julio Jones doesn't know on his he doesn't know he's on the phone. It jumps out to you. Why does it jump out to you? Oh, because he's being honest. Right. Everything else I'm consuming is just a web of lies and marketing and money making and mythology. Why does it stand out to me? Look at how honest that is. It's because you don't hear interviews like that. A guy doesn't simply say like that in front of cameras.
If Julio was actually booked as a guest on that show, Julio would have said, I love Atlanta. I love the fans. We'll see what happens here. If I leave, fine. If I stay, I'm happy. I've been here for my entire career. He would have said, you're right, Dan. That's why it stood out.
Hey, listeners, it's Mike Ryan, and I've changed a lot over the course of 20 years that you've known me. I've gone from unlikable to, well, my hair has changed. But my point is, while a lot's changed over our relationship, there's one thing that hasn't changed one bit, and that's a great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So what's the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite has sparked this debate way back in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. They keep it simple. It's got undebatable quality, great taste, 96 calories, you know all those things. It's a beer that strips everything away that you don't need and holds on to what matters most. But with Miller Lite, you don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. It's both those things. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
To get back to your bigger point, though, Dan, do you even think it's possible for a league partner to be in an ethical fourth-party journalistic purist world? I mean, I think you probably dealt with this a lot when you worked at ESPN. I don't know if there's any ethical line there that isn't already being crossed just by the partnership.
That's such a good point, because it's so littered with conflicts of interest, because the starting point is you're a league partner and now you're right. Also reporting on that league partner. But do you realize that when Julio Jones does that interview that honestly, what we're doing the rest of the time is just marketing?
Right. Yeah.
Like what we're doing the rest of the time is just commercials and infomercials for this product that get us to the product, that the honesty stands out because everything else you're consuming is so dishonest.
But this is interesting to me. So because you would know best, Dan. So if Adam Schefter got the Rodgers news and sat on it until draft night and then released it because that's what they told him to do.
That's problematic, Stugatz. Right. But I don't know exactly how it happened, because he says it's a bunch of different sources. And I don't know if that's Rodgers camp trying to ruin it pettiness on the draft night so that it feels the same. I don't have enough information on what happened there journalistically, but Jessica's larger point is the correct one. We talked about this with John Skipper on South Beach Sessions, that when they were doing that concussions reporting with NPR, he looked up one day and said, well, I'm fighting for business over here and I'm fighting for journalism over here. Where does that conflict of interest meet on the concussion reporting? Oh, I've got to get out. Me and ESPN have to get out of the reporting on the concussions because I'm a league partner and I'm the conflict of interest. It has arrived on my desk at the very top of this. And so what you see happening now with Fox and Julio Jones is a bunch of executives who are mad about something. They're telling Fox, how could you do this? Fox is throwing up its hands and saying, we're really sorry. We made a mistake. We're making a lot of programming here and mistakes get made. But what gets trampled in the process is the journalism. And Jessica's right. You can only do it so much. It can't be 100% pure if you are in bed with your partners financially. There are going to be all sorts of contaminants in that. You just have to aspire to be journalistically objective. And I would say, Jessica, be transparent in those moments when you're not about what the conflicts are.
Furthermore, I think that a lot of journalists would tell you that Adam Schefter is not a journalist. I don't even know if he considers himself a journalist, but the reporting that he does, it's news-based. It's not necessarily contextualizing anything. He's not writing stories. Like, we had Jenny Vrentis on the other day, and obviously I'm biased because she's a friend of mine, but that traditional journalism. Adam Schefter is providing information in kind of bite-sized pieces, and in a lot of ways can be considered more of a mouthpiece for the NFL. I don't mean to say that in a disparaging way, but I think that's how a lot of other journalists would view his reporting. And I think that there's a legitimate question there about what service he provides and if it's actually journalism in the first place.
What an interesting place for Jessica to be older than all of us on. Everyone here thinks of Adam Schefter as a journalist, but she is absolutely applying print sensibilities. And Adam Schefter used to be that, but he hasn't been that in a long time. And the vetting of things is much harder in print than it is on television and radio. Those things you can't get that stuff wrong in print. It aspires to objectivity more. I can't believe Jessica just went after one of your icons. Everyone here believes that Adam Schefter is a journalist.
I think that's also an unbelievably snobby view of what the media's function is. Like, I get, like, from an investigation, you want, you know, Adam Schefter to use his significant contacts within the NFL to uncover some, you know, untoward things that happen. But he's also, like, journalism is providing information that is useful to its readers. And ESPN's readers care a lot about what Dak Prescott's contract is going to be. They care a lot about trades. They care a lot about free agency. You can't tell people in such a snobby way when we're trying to make, you know, ethics-based arguments that, you know, that stuff doesn't actually matter. Of course it matters. The readers determine that it's important information.
Okay, Whittingham, but this is something that Amin Alhassan and I actually talked about when we were in Miami together. If Adam Schefter didn't report on Aaron Rodgers gets traded to the Jets. If Adam Schefter didn't report on that, you would find that out anyways, because Aaron Rodgers would be on the Jets. So do you need Adam Schefter to tell you that?
Yes.
Is that journalism, or is that just knowing something first and tweeting it out?
I'm going to find out on the first Tuesday of November who the president is going to be. There's still a shitload of reporting on who the president is going to be on the first Tuesday of November every 4 years.
But you're conflating two different things, like the result of an election and reporting on what that result is and then contextualizing that fact and what it means. Is those are two different things. And it's not a snobby argument. It's just the dissemination of information. And
the dissemination of information is journalism. That's what it is.
Listen, you're both making good points. Let me be clear and very clear on one of the points that was made. Aaron Rodgers will never be a Jet.
A Woj bomb is so much better than journalism. I don't care what anybody says.
It is journalism.
No,
it's cotton candy journalism, but it is.
I've never viewed Schefter, Shams, Woj, any of those guys as journalists. I haven't. They're newsbreakers. They give me what I want, and they do it exceptionally well.
What is Love news? It, the breaking of news is journalism.
Woj, it's like crack cocaine, man.
Get your articles out of here.
I am legitimately stunned at what has happened here over the last few minutes, where Jessica is a fossilized fighter on behalf of the 1700s print aesthetic, and Whittingham is calling someone else a snob.
Wow.
Stu Gatz here for my friends over at Simply Safe. When you travel, do concerns back home nag you? Did you lock up? Did you leave a window open? That's why I recommend investing in Simply Safe Home Security today for award-winning security and peace of mind wherever your summer plans take you. I've had Simply Safe in my home for many years now. The peace of mind it gives me, especially during the summertime when I'm all over the place, is incredible. Because I know the things I care about, the things I value back home, I can always keep an eye on it using Simply Safe's indoor and outdoor cameras. So do me a favor. Before you head out on your next vacation, make sure to protect your whole home with Simply Safe's variety of indoor and outdoor cameras, plus add sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day, no contracts to worry about, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Simply Safe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. So right now, get 20% off any new Simply Safe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/DLB. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
Hey listeners, it's Mike Ryan, and I've changed a lot over the course of 20 years that you've known me. I've gone from unlikable to, well, my hair has changed. But my point is, while a lot's changed over our relationship, there's one thing that hasn't changed one bit, and that's a great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So what's the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite has sparked this debate way back in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. They keep it simple. It's got undebatable quality, great taste, 96 calories, you know all those things. It's a beer that strips everything away that you don't need and holds on to what matters most. But with Miller Lite, you don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. It's both those things. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.